Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Serra. Let's dive in. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. I'm super excited to announce our guest today. We have so much to dive into. Lauren Clements, who is the head of marketing at Pipestream. She has 15 plus years of experience in B2B marketing. And guys, she has done it all. She has been in every single aspect of marketing, and I'm so pumped to dive into it. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you so much, Jane. Appreciate it.
Yay. And she's also a fellow newish Floridian here in Tampa. I'm in Miami for anyone who doesn't know. So we'll have to come visit each other.
Yes.
But Lauren, so we'll get into all of the many hats you've worn in marketing and the different roles you've taken on and maybe which you prefer.
Yes.
But before we do that, how did you get started on your journey of B2B marketing?
Okay. So great question. I think like a lot of marketers, I could say, I just kind of fell into it. But I would say that that's not telling the whole story, right? So when I was in grad school, I had a mentor. His name is Andrew Graf. He's the CEO of an advertising agency in Boston called Allen & Garretson. And he really kind of sat me down one day and was like, you know, what do you want to do? And back then, I really just wanted to make a Super Bowl commercial. Like, that was my
yes.
That was my goal. I was like, I'm going to make a Super Bowl commercial someday. I'm going to be in advertising and do all those things. And he, you know, he listened to me. But then he said, you know, I think you should look around, see how we acquire business, how we bring clients in. Think about the things that are happening in my business that you actually like and what's interesting. And through that internship and that mentorship relationship, I really realized I like the sort of figuring out who our client is, the strategic aspects of B2B. And yeah, after that, I was like hooked. And so
yes.
Once I finished grad school, I was looking for a B2B job and I've never switched from that.
So cool. I love that you had a mentor right out the gate. So who right. could give you that correction? Because I feel like I had a very similar start mm-hmm. where I have this memory burned into my brain because it was such a scarring moment. I was in an interview, probably for an internship or yeah. right after school that I don't remember. But they asked me like, why do you want to come in to get into marketing? I was like, I love commercials. Like I always find myself like criticizing or loving, like commenting on commercials when I watch them. And the interviewer was like, well, that's not marketing. That's advertising. Exactly. So you need to go that route. And I was so scarred that I got this wrong in the interview. But there's really such overlap. Like she was just not nice.
Not
for a newbie.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you had a positive experience where you like shared something similar. And the person was like, okay, that's definitely one route you could go. But take a look around and see what else there is here and what like options you have.
Yes. Right.
That's so good. And it's so important to have that. And it's a good reminder to be that person now for others, right?
I really think so. I mean, I think, again, like, I think that's the only way that a junior marketer could have any kind of guidance. Because even in school, you're learning your four C's and all these things that are not really real marketing. But when you're talking to a real marketer, it's really important for us to tell the story of how to guide your career properly.
Yes. And all the different avenues you can go down, right? Because you don't, when you're first, if, like you're saying in school, I didn't know if there was B2B and B2C. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't taught in school. No. It was just like the basics and the foundations of marketing. Right. I think it's different nowadays, but.
Hopefully it's different nowadays, but who knows? But also even things like, there's field marketing, there's event marketing, there's all these content. I mean, those things existed even when I was in school, but I had never heard of that until I was doing the internships and talking to people that are actually doing the job. And that's really what sets it apart when you have somebody to talk to.
It's so true. Maybe we need more of those career days in college, right? To see what the actual like act of what you're studying and majoring in, how it's applied.
And I do think, like, for especially for me, so I'm a first generation American. My parents immigrated here from Jamaica, and my dad is a doctor. He's never worked in corporate America in his life. Like, great, he's successful, he's smart, he can do all these things, but he's never had to like put on a suit and sit in an interview. So I really, really, really needed that guidance. And that's kind of how I got to a point where I was seeking those things out.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't start from early on in your career seeking out that guidance, and even now I'm still seeking it out.
Yes.
You know, you're never going to really know your path if you're not constantly looking for that.
Yeah. That's so true. Even I need to get better at that even now, just finding more. I mean, this podcast has been amazing for me, just in exposing to different people and perspectives and what they're doing. It's so motivating. I hope it is for listeners too, but it definitely is as the host.
I can tell you it is for listeners. As a listener, it's definitely motivating.
Yay. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's my way as a shy person, right? To talk to people and learn without having to reach out and be like, hey, can I just learn from you? Yeah.
It's like a vulnerability moment, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oof, maybe I don't have it all figured out. Sure, I have 15 years of marketing.
Do we ever? When do we get it all figured out?
Never. It'll never be figured out.
So funny. Well, you were talking about all of like getting exposure to all these different roles.
Yeah.
Let's dive into how you then took on all of these roles at different companies and really, you literally tried on each type of marketing. You had sales,
yes,
right? Experience, integrated marketing, field marketing, product marketing, ops, and CEO of your own company. Like, come on. So, let me know what like brought you down this path to try it all on and what you gained from that and what you think now.
It sounds so impressive when you say it like that, but
it is.
It's not.
Kudos. I think it is. I see that and I'm like, wow.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, so sales. I started in sales because when I finished school, we were in the middle of a recession. And every marketer went into sales because there was no marketing roles, right? So,
yes.
And I thought, I did a lot of retail when I was young and things like that. I was like, I can do sales. I could do this for a little while until, you know, things change. And I got into that role. And it was like, the first time I got a no, I couldn't handle it.
Not for me.
You know, I stuck with it because I really wanted to try and be successful in sales. So I figured it out. I tried to love the hustle. But I think at the end of the day, I just really didn't. However, that has helped me a lot in marketing because it has helped me sort of like see eye to eye with my sales partners, right? They're stressed out about that number. I totally get it. I was stressed out about that number nonstop. You know, when they're yelling at me, I'm like, okay, this isn't about me. This is about performance and
anxiety.
The anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for 2 years and I thought I'm ready to move on to marketing. There were still no marketing jobs.
It was tough. Yeah.
It's a hard time. So I decided to go back to school. And when I was in school, that's when I had all those internships and met a ton of people and kind of got a flavor for a couple of different things. And thought maybe I'd be interested in product marketing because I like kind of selling items and figuring out who that buyer is and those types of things. So I joined a company after grad school called Haemonetics that they had not launched a product for like 15 years. So and everything had changed in marketing even then from 15 years prior to that.
Wow.
So 2010, right? So things had changed. There was digital marketing was coming out. Like, so we were building this whole go-to-market kit for this product and doing the launch. So I got all this experience working with like engineering and doing sales support and product launches and creating. But even then we were creating print materials and like brochures and all these different kind of tidbits of marketing materials that just, I don't even think I would create today for a product launch.
Yeah. Yeah, trifolds, right? Remember?
Yeah, trifolds, exactly. Exactly. So I got a ton of really great experience, but I quickly realized like I was really much more interested in software tech, like SaaS. And
yeah.
I understood it more. I will admit that my husband is a software developer and was like, you need to get into SaaS now or else you'll never get in.
Yes.
So I left that role and I joined a company called Digital Science, which it kept me in that like science healthcare world that I wanted to stay in. But it was a startup incubator. So they find and incubate scientific related startups. I will say it was amazing because I got the experience of both an established company and a startup. So I got in there and they were like, we need an event strategy. So I'm building an event strategy for 8 different brands. And then they're like, oh, we don't have marketing automation. And, you know, marketing automation was just coming out. They just did their sales. They just bought Salesforce. So they're like, okay, well, we need to be doing email. And I'm like, yeah, we do. Let's implement it. So I'm implementing that for 8 different brands. And that
is where
the integrated marketing and operations started to come in. I'm trying to streamline these companies and bring them in. It was fascinating because I was working for what I would call an established company, right? They had their processes and their documentation. And then I'm interfacing with these startups that have, you know, their big personalities and their I'm
not
the rules. Yes. And I'm a disruptor. Bringing those people together and just trying to still celebrate the marketer that was already there and support them in reaching their goals and making sure that aligns to our sales goals.
And
it just helped me get that experience.
Oh, that's
in
so
all
cool.
These different facets. And it was at an amazing time, again, in marketing, where between that like 2014 to 2020, basically, where things just rapidly changed, right? Like all of a sudden we're doing ads, paid ads on LinkedIn, and
You're
investing all these dollars and all these other things and that you just really weren't doing before. Where I started, you know, we were doing events and going to conferences, and by the end we're like, no, we only do webinars. And so it was just such an amazing time to be in a company like that where I could get my hands into anything and they were like, yep, go do that. Yes,
we need
that. I'm very, very fortunate to have worked in that company till that allowed me to do that. So that's why I've held so many different roles.
Yeah. Even just at that one position, it seems like you held so many different roles too, because you got to kind of dabble in all aspects. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And honestly, it was the attitude of just like, let me help where I can and let that guide like my curiosity, right? Like I was curious about why our emails were not hitting the right target, for example.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, we don't have the right software in there. Maybe we're not looking at the right data. So I'm digging into the operations and the data behind that. And then, maybe the messaging isn't right. So now I'm looking at our content. Now I'm looking at, trying to figure out how to weave our story together and maybe the branding, you know. So it was a unique opportunity. And that I think that really helped drive my career.
Wow. And what, after going through all of these positions and especially at so many different companies, because it's kind of like you had this hyper growth, it was a period of 6 years that was really 12 years or more because you were working at so many companies, right?
Yes.
So
that's
cool.
Exactly what it feels like.
What's your takeaway from it? Like what aspects did you learn that you love about marketing and which are not really something you love to focus on?
Yeah. Okay. So the things I love about marketing is, number one, working with the sales team. So like helping them overcome some of the hurdles that they're facing day to day, especially with tech. Like sometimes it gets so complicated because, geniuses are inventing these companies, right? And it makes sense to them, but that's not your buyer. Your buyer is somebody who's confused about why they need whatever piece of technology you're trying to sell. So I think that part of it is trying to like help the sales team sell the story and tell the story. Love that. And then I would say the things that I really don't like is like event marketing. Ugh.
Yeah. It's tough.
It's a grind.
Yeah.
And like for very little return. I think that that's the tough part about it is that it's very traditional marketing, right? You're putting together your branding. You're putting together this, like, you're trying to tell the story of the company in a physical way.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. But it costs a lot of money.
So
it costs a lot of time. your whole team is there, and then there's very little return, however you try to do it. Like, truly, I've yet to interact with a marketer that says, oh, well, we got ROI on this event right away.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Yeah, you have to do something to stand out, really, because the booth just isn't cutting it anymore.
It doesn't.
What do you think about, I feel like conversations I've been having lately, and even just in my LinkedIn feed, everyone's coming back to this importance of relationships, which comes back to events, right? Like this in-person FaceTime. Yeah. Different size events, perhaps, but it seems like there's a resurgence post-pandemic, like people just want to connect again and be social. And also with the inundation of content from AI, and like there's just so much in our face. So it's so busy online now that seeing someone face-to-face just sticks with you. Like, I'm going to remember Pipestream, right? So if that could become something I need in the future, that's like top of mind because I know you.
Yeah.
So curious how you feel about like events seemingly getting a resurgence in marketing.
I definitely understand why it's getting a resurgence. And I think that we'll go through a few years of like, oh yeah, we really love this. This is great. And then it'll change.
Yeah. Agreed. Then the exhaustion will set in.
And I think we have this renewed energy, right? Because we haven't seen each other in years. But I still stand by the fact that, yes, it's important to make the connection. Yes, I believe that relationships are important, but you definitely need a place to meet the people. But you have to continue that story after the event. You have to connect with them. You have to get their phone number and send them texts when you think about something that you talked about. Like, you have to continue that on past the event. And I think that that's where people fall short. And that's where that ROI just doesn't come in. Like, you can have a great conversation with somebody at a booth, but if you're not following up with them for the next week straight, what is the point?
That's so true. It's that follow-up. It's back to integration, right? Exactly. Integrating all the aspects of marketing. So it's one piece, one very exhausting piece that a lot of time and effort goes into versus all the follow-up.
Right.
So true. What do you see? Well, the past couple of years have changed in every way, right? How we market, how we are as people, how we connect with people. What do you see working right now or in the next year? I mean, I can't even say more than a year because who knows next year. But in 2024, what do you see working for growth?
I think to pick up where you were saying about relationships, I really think it's more about communities. So for me, I would say it's more about connecting with people on LinkedIn in those groups and actually participating in those groups.
Yes.
And you know, finding your LinkedIn influencer and following them around LinkedIn and connecting with people in that way, where you feel like seen, heard, and people are giving you the solutions to some of the problems that you're facing in your day-to-day work and role. And if as a company you guys can get into those conversations, that's, I think, where you're really going to make an impact, right? So for Pipestream, for example, we provide a service where you are actually interfacing with the customer experience team at a company, right? And we're walking through, like, what does your customer say in these situations? And then we're producing a product that is a reflection of what they suspect. But then as it's deployed, we can go back to the communities that our clients have developed online and see if what we have developed is a reflection of what's happening in those communities, and continue to insert the, okay, well, Pipestream or whatever company we're working for, company X, has a solution on their website where you can just put it in on their chatbot and get the answer you need without having to call their call center or call, you know, do the things that are annoying you in this community that you're talking about. So I think that's really where, like, getting the stickiness of your product, being top of mind for people, is in those communities where people are just kind of talking about a problem that you already are solving in a way that is not salesy.
Yes. That's exactly what I wanted to ask next. You nailed it. Is how do you do that? Because I always find it interesting. Maybe it's just me. I always have my guard up, right? Mm-hmm. And like, oh, this person's going to try to sell me something, yeah. not hearing it. Mm-hmm. But I always imagine other people are the same. So if I see somebody struggling with something that my company can solve, I want to go and tell them, but I feel so salesy. Like, what's the right. natural, organic way to go in and talk as you, as a person? Any tips on that end?
Yeah. Well, okay. I would say, I always think about it this way. Like, if your friend came to you and was like, oh my gosh, I'm breaking out everywhere. And you are like, oh my God, I have this really amazing product that I love. You don't work for that company, but you're talking about it like you do, right? You're pitching that product yes. to them in that exact same way. And that is what I would do. That's what I do online all the time. You know, people will say, I need help with XYZ. And I'll say, oh my God, I get it. I was struggling with this too. I understand your problem. Here's a couple of solutions. And I do think you could also suggest other options, right?
Yeah.
Bury your product in there. But I think it is that like human connection of saying, I get it. I've been there. I understand it. And again, I think that goes back to when you're hiring for a marketing person, are they a reflection of the people that are buying your product?
Yeah.
Like you have to hire a marketer that is who's buying, right? Like for Pipestream, we are selling to forward-thinking marketing people who are looking for other solutions for customer experience, right? So that is exactly how I would identify myself. And so when I see people online having those problems, I can honestly respond because that is where I would
like the
solution. I've been there. Exactly.
That's so interesting. And it's also, you kind of mentioned Miracle on 34th Street style, right? Where you're recommending, like the Santo is recommending alternatives or where they could find something because it wasn't in the store.
Right.
Not just always being on selling mode, but fitting it in where it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I think too, like if everything you're putting out there to the world is selling your product, nobody's going to believe you. But if you're putting a little bit of like, oh, here's my personal struggle. Here's some other products I'm looking at. Here's a cool book I've read. And here's a solution I have to a problem you're having. Then I think it stops feeling so salesy.
That's so true. Because even you can think about this too, the communities you're in, or if you're on LinkedIn in your feed, there are people that share a ton of stuff that I relate to all the time. And then they'll share something that's from their company or about their company. And I actually will look at it and partake, engage, because that's not all they're putting out there.
Right.
But there are those people who do just put out like their company stuff and it's just selling all the time. And those, like, it's less, you're less likely to engage with. So,
and you see that too, like in your feed, in your LinkedIn feed, and you see those people who are constantly doing that. They're not getting the likes, they're not getting conversations on other posts, but they're also not engaging in their community at all. You're just shouting.
Not just shouting. Yeah, you're shouting at people instead of engaging with people. That's so true.
Exactly. Like we have GoCards for a reason. I don't think people belong on social media.
I love that. I'm writing that down. That's a good quote. Stop shouting at your audience.
Stop.
And how do you, I was just talking to this morning, Jared Robin, who started Rev Genius and Rev Room. So he would love this conversation because he's all about community and building real authentic communities. What do you think the value is in creating a community for your audience or just adding on and participating in existing communities? Have you done both or? Yeah.
It's a great question. No, it's a question that I'm constantly grappling with.
Right. Same.
Because if you start your own community, at what point does it feel inauthentic, right? Does it feel like this was just a sales funnel versus I'm starting a community for like a problem I'm having and people can come in and tell me what they're, or like, or I'm participating in another community that was started because of like-minded people, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think a couple of things. I've done community development where it's just our customers,
that's
it. And they're talking to each other and they're talking about their problems at different organizations. And that
really
does work when it's your own community, right? It's your own self-started thing. But I think it's tough to have like a public community that's started by a company. It's too inauthentic and people aren't handling it.
I agree. It's really hard. I think I've only seen one or two companies do this well, and it baffles me how they do it. But like Sixth Sense has a community in their coffee chats. They do the CMO coffee talks. That's just amazing. And I do always have Sixth Sense top of mind if I ever need that. But they never sell it. It's a genuine community of people talking about different issues. It's so good.
Yeah.
But you're right. A lot of communities I'm in, like Slack groups, it just feels very staged, I guess, or scripted. And there's not that much engagement because it's just trying to sell you eventually or connect you with their customers. So it is. It's difficult. And there's so many communities out there now.
Yeah.
Like, why create another one?
I think, like, Sixth Sense is such a good example because Sixth Sense is a tool that it takes kind of a long time to understand what it is they do.
Yes.
And their values. So they needed that community development so that people could advocate for them and share what they're doing and explain. And, like, they needed that to be part of their marketing mix more than anything because it's, like, a totally new product on the market. And it's just like a different way of looking at ABM and intent and all of those great things. But the other company, I don't know, what was the other company that you meant that you were saying does a good job?
That's only the only one that comes to mind is a company created community that does a really good job. But because they also have like CMO coffee talks, but that's Sixth Sense, but it's separated enough that it doesn't feel salesy.
They're selling.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that's the ticket is that, like, if your product really needs it, then yeah, do the community that makes sense because you need to explain more what it is you're solving.
And if you're creating it for your customers, like you said, that's such a good point because then they can give each other ideas of how they're using the platform. So that's a really good use too.
And I have seen that work very well. One of the companies I was working for at Digital Science did that, and they did a Slack community, and they had, I think it was like 3 years in a row, 100% retention.
Wow. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. We can talk to the company anytime I have a question right there on my Slack.
That's true.
It's huge.
Like the best customer service. Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Yeah.
So interesting. So community is working. What do you see? What are you done with or what is not working in 2024?
Twitter.
That's why, right? That's why they got the rebrand because it's foreshadowing
out
the end.
Which is so funny because it literally goes hand in hand with the community thing. Like, you know, 10 years ago, that is where the communities were. Like back in those days, we could like at so-and-so, you want to be on my webinar today? Yeah, I'll jump on. Like,
yeah,
Twitter. It was amazing.
Yes.
You could find anybody, talk to anybody, get advice, like incredible. And it have deteriorated.
Yes. That's so true. There used to be so many micro communities on Twitter that I didn't even know about until it was too late. But like the SEO chat and then there's SEM chat, right? All these different that would happen like every Tuesday at 3 o'clock or whatever time it was. And it just brought people together into this conversation, this scheduled time to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
So sad.
I remember, and I'll give her a shout out, Laura Wheeler. She was our head of comms back then. And she's an incredible communications person. She works at Google now, et cetera, et cetera. She would like say, okay, well, we should do a webinar on this. Well, where are you going to find those people? And she goes, oh, Twitter. And in a day, she would have come. Things people on the roster ready for a panel the next week. Like that
was
incredible, the power of Twitter back then. And it's just not there. I mean, I don't even think we could do it on LinkedIn at this point. Like, same world.
Yeah, it's true. Because now LinkedIn, everyone gets inundated with DMs and all the in-mails and people trying to sell them things. So your message can get lost.
Totally lost. Yeah.
And it feels like no one's on X anymore, right?
I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like it's easy for companies to get caught up in responding to trolls and responding to things that will get them in even more trouble. So I think it's just too risky of a platform.
Yeah.
Fitting in.
Do you think it's not even worth having handle or presence at all or just limited?
I think limited. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have something big going on, it's
probably important for you to still participate in Twitter, but
yeah,
I don't think it's an everyday like LinkedIn where you're posting every day, or even Facebook or Instagram. I don't think, or TikTok. I think those platforms have taken off and taken place of.
Yeah. And Twitter used to be the one where people were posting like every hour because it would get lost and you had to keep sharing. It's crazy how things have changed.
Yes.
Well, speaking of change, what do you see changing in the next like 3 to 5 years, if you can foresee anything?
I mean, I think it's going to be the AI stuff. I mean, that's an easy answer, but I think we'll start to see AI permeate marketing and permeate other roles a lot more than just, oh, it's a content tool.
Yeah.
We'll start to see things like, for example, companies like Zapier, where they're connecting different tools together. I think we'll start to see AI really take over some of those roles internally. And then, yeah, I would say it's just AI is going to start doing a whole lot more than we realize.
Yes. I mean, even in the past, it feels like AI has always been around at this point, and it's just been a year and all of this has happened. So can you imagine?
No,
we can't. Like, who knows?
I can't. Like, I think even thinking about like planning for a campaign, now we could get to a point where it's like, okay, well, based on this, my sales data here, I'm going to upload my sales data. Who's my buyer? Design me a persona. Okay. Now I've got my persona. Now I'm going to put my persona in here. What are some platforms that I should be advertising on or talking to them on? Okay. Here's the key platforms for that persona. And then what is the message that's going to get them to click my link or download my document, or, you know, what are they looking for? What's the problems they're trying to solve? Like, all of those things can be put into AI to create this super robust and highly targeted campaign that will actually get results based on behavior data, right? That's in the AI. So I think that that's where we're really going to.
Yeah. Do you think that marketing teams are going to shrink because of this? Because so much of this can be strategized in theory by AI now?
I think we'll start to see marketing teams do something different with their time.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll shrink, because the thing is that what AI does, and at least even in my team, what AI has done for my team, we're able to produce so much more because of AI. Like, I can get a month's worth of blogs done with the help of AI because of the topic ideas and the make sure that this sounds right. Like, that stuff that usually takes 3 days because I'm going back and forth with my content writer, like, that stopped that. But now I can do 5 of those in a week, right? Like, now I can get that material out to the right people so much faster. So I think it's gonna maybe kind of kill us even more in the capacity area.
More on our plate. We were talking about those to-do lists before the call. They're just going to keep getting bigger and bigger, but hopefully we'll be able to tick through them faster.
And I think that, where flyer might have taken you 2 weeks to finish, it's going to take you 3 days. Well, guess what? We could do a flyer for every single persona that we're going after and make it location-based and, you know, like, all of the little factors and elements that we kind of start to ignore because we're trying to get as much done as we possibly can, that we can start digging in, right? Like, it becomes more robust.
Yeah. Something else that you mentioned that's changing now on teams, you brought this up and I would love to dive into it, is that you're seeing a disparity in skill sets between CMOs and directors and managers. Can you explain this? And let's go into, like, what do you think is causing this and what does this mean for teams?
Yeah. So this is my soapbox and I apologize in advance.
All for it.
What? Okay. So my big thing is that marketing is the only department where the people who are running marketing, so your typical CMO person, does not have the same knowledge and skill set as a junior marketer entering their team at the bottom of the rung, essentially. So, for example, a CTO knows how to code, understands coding language, just like a junior
developer.
And that junior developer might know a lot about React and your CTO might not, like, as a writing language, but they can still converse about the basic language, right?
It's so
iterative. But a CMO
with 25 years of experience, for example, has spent most of their career doing print media, print marketing, yes, and doing TV commercials and going to events and conferences and printing out thousands and thousands of pieces of swag. And like a new junior marketer is talking to them about intent and tools like Sixth Sense and
yes,
buying behaviors and clicks and what a click-through rate means for this platform versus that platform and why you need to do content ads instead of doing like just get a demo ads. Like that doesn't work.
Yes.
And they can't even talk to each other because they're not speaking the same language. And so I think it's hard for marketers today because it does them such a disservice to have somebody in the C-suite who can't actually communicate what it is they're doing from like day to day, right? Like, why is this person creating this kind of content in this volume and this, you know, talking about this type of thing?
Yes.
A lot of CMOs today, I don't feel like can tell you that, right? And there are ways of even understanding consumer behavior. Like for me, understanding consumer behavior, yeah, I'm going to go to Sixth Sense. I'm going to get my intent details. I'm going to figure out from the data that I'm seeing from those tools what the buyer behavior looks like. But for a seasoned CMO, they're going to do a physical focus group. They're going to, you know, do some surveys and send those out. They're going to, you know, I just think it's a shame. It is a shame. Yes. And I think that's why you start seeing these articles of like, oh, the CMO is dying, like Lowe's and a couple of other big companies kills their CEO off the C-suite because they're not useful. Well, they're not useful because marketing has changed. It's not the thing.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Everything you're saying is so true. I never realized that before. Like even the head of sales, right? CRO has done sales before. Like the, that pretty much, I mean, details and tech changes, but it's pretty much the same stuff.
Right.
CFO. Finance doesn't change. I mean, again, the tools, the tech gets more advanced, but they get it. They get everything everyone under them is doing.
That's
right. And CTO, like you said, and then CMO, you're right. There's such a huge gap where we always have to be like, oh, I'm going to talk to so-and-so from my team to come talk about that because that's not my forte. And
So and that's like, why are you in this role? Like, you don't know enough about, like, I'm sorry, but not your average CEO definitely doesn't know how SEO or SEM works.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know, you know, I mean, maybe they'll know a little bit more about inbound marketing now, thanks to HubSpot, but they're not going to understand some of those other nuances that are happening in digital and marketing, how it is today. It's just, it's difficult.
So what does this mean for us? Like, in it, I feel like we're right now, just like you and me and our level, we are in between and we get everything before and we get everything after. Like we see both sides and can connect. But in 10 years, we probably won't. And what is so what happens to us? Is it really like, what do you see happening from here? How do we close that gap?
So for me, I think we won't be part of that gap, to be honest with you, because now, I think marketing has finally transitioned to being an iterative department like the other departments. So where we were coming up and it was like digital marketing was first coming out, HubSpot was just starting, LinkedIn and ads and paid media and all those things were coming out, we understand the general rules and rules of engagement around those activities.
Yeah.
Where a CMO with 25 years of experience would not necessarily. So I think we can still have those conversations with these junior marketers that are up and fresh and on the cutting, bleeding edge of everything that's new out there in marketing. We can still have those conversations. So I think that gap will start to shrink. But I think the struggle is that the damage that those CMOs could do for the marketing role in the C-suite in this sort of 10-year time that we're in, where there won't be an opportunity for us to be on the C-suite as marketers because we've become so irrelevant in that capacity. So I don't know if it's that we need to call ourselves something else, but if we need to keep pushing
you know, that C-suite, or just like making sure that our finance friends understand that things are changing and that when they get to the C-suite, still have a CMO.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if this is, we're seeing new titles, right? Come up, like a CMO is like, even Latiny from Sixth Sense, it moved from a CMO position to a CRO position.
Right.
I've seen that happen a couple times now. I wonder if that's one option. And I'm hearing of the chief go-to-market officer.
Yes. Chief growth officer, go-to-market.
Chief growth. Yes.
And I do think
is it getting a rebrand?
Getting a rebrand. So yes, I definitely think we're getting a rebrand. I have seen that most of the time a CRO, I mean, that was a good example with Sixth Sense, but most of the time CRO is coming from sales, which I think is detrimental to companies, because when a CRO is in a conversation with a product person, the product person is saying it's going to be 3 months. The sales focused CRO is saying, oh God, I have nothing to sell for 3 months. But a marketer hears that and they're like, sweet, I can build our book of business. I can build that pipeline. I have 3 months to like get this campaign rolling and be able to give my sales team 100,000 leads to go after and close once the product is ready. So true. It's just a different mindset. So I think growth, definitely chief growth officer, chief go-to-market officer is probably where we're going. And that's good, right? That's indicative of that the sales teams and marketing teams and product teams are all, and the customer experience teams are all kind of coming together and understanding what it is we do.
Yes. This is so fascinating. I feel like you need to write a book on this, or like an editorial, right? Like, and publish it somewhere big, like Wall Street Journal, because this is so, it's so eye-opening. It's really interesting. And it kind of brings us back to community again too, right? Because that is one way that we make sure that this doesn't happen to us. And also that CMOs that are from an earlier time period that did things differently pre-digital, the community is the branch to connect you into what's going on now and stay. It's almost like, by no means am I comparing us to doctors. Doctors were like way more.
I'm talking about, they don't like it all.
But it's, and you coming from a family with doctors.
Yeah, I have watched my family as a surgeon. I'm like, I do way more work than you.
That's so funny. That's hilarious. But they have to like, right? Like things advance and change so much from my little understanding of the medical field, that very little, that they need to stay on top and they have to go back and get new certifications and things. It's almost the same. Like, we need to make sure we're staying in touch with the community and learning what's top of mind for people and going back and getting certifications and continuing our education always, because it changes so much so
and
fast.
Wouldn't that help us though? Like, wouldn't that help us stop the like the questioning and like, what does marketing even do? Like, if we have regular certifications and regular cadence of like, you have to make sure you're meeting these things in order to be in this type of role.
Yeah.
It help us in our
I love that idea. And that's even something for us to think about for our teams, right? To keep them fresh. Make sure I try to do this. It's really hard though, right? To justify, but it's so important to carve out educational budget on your spreadsheet just so you can make sure your team has X dollars to spend each quarter or each half year on some kind of a course or advancement that's related to their role.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. I should do that more with my teams too.
I'm trying to be better at that and like send things when I can.
it's really good.
One thing, Lauren, too, because I feel like I want to tap your brain nonstop.
Yes.
We touched on this a little bit before we started. I'm curious if we got a little bit more personal. You already gave us a ton of tips and things to think about. And a personal side, I'm curious if you could walk us through one of your biggest career hurdles.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say probably my biggest career hurdle, and something that I probably will struggle with forever, is being like a plus size Black woman in tech. It is tough, right? Like, we are a rare breed, and especially somebody who, I've been in tech since the tech boom of 2000 whatever, I won't say the year, and you know, still today I get questions, and it's not questioned on how are we doing it, it's why are we doing it, why do you think that would work, what makes you believe that, rather than, okay, I'm going to listen to your guidance And I get it on both sides, right? Like my team questions me, my management questions me, and it's not because they are inherently like against me or anything like that, but I think it just comes from a place of you don't exactly fit the mold of what we're used to seeing in your role. So yeah. I'm not sure you're going to be able to do it. You know, I've been in interviews. I've been in job interviews where I'm in the final interview and the CMO comes in and he sits down and straight up says to me, you don't look like somebody who would work here.
What? In 2024? That still happens?
No.
This is crazy.
It was probably 2015, I would say, around that time. It was still too late to be saying that.
I hope that it's better now in 2024, but that's probably...
It is
probably just like ignorant.
Yeah. It comes out in different ways, right? It comes out in ways of like, oh, well, I don't think you're going to be able to do that. Or like, do you have experience in doing those things? And it's for me, especially, you know, you talked about it. I've done all these different roles. I've been in seen it all.
Yeah.
And I still every single day I'm questioned about my professionalism, my ability to do the job at hand. And I really do. I hate saying that because it is hard, but I would say that a man who was not Black in my role would probably not get as many questions or hurdles or no's as I receive every single day.
Wow. Well, two questions on this, and I'm sorry, we are going to go over. I hope you can stay a few more minutes. How do you handle this? Like, I know you say it's a hurdle you're still going through, unfortunately. Right. How do you get through this and any kind of tips that you can share that have helped you? But also, what can the rest of us, what can everyone else do to help delete this and stop this from happening and get us back to where we should be in 2024?
So the thing that has helped me, and it hasn't happened until recently for me in my career. Well, that's not true. There's been little glimmers of it that have given me a hint of that that's what I need, but it's really having an advocate. It's having somebody who's in a place of privilege, and if you are not a plus size person who is a woman who is Black, you are in a place of privilege. So having somebody in a place of privilege vouch for you when you're not invited into the room that you should be in, or when you're not, or your work is being questioned, or somebody's taking credit for it. Having somebody in the room saying, which happens most of the time, but somebody sitting there saying, no, Lauren did this, or whoever did this and worked really hard to get this out the door, and they know what they're doing and they're super smart. And just having that person say that, like having a white man tell you that this girl is smart, for some reason, people believe that more than anybody else. You know, it's inherent in our community. It's inherent in our society. It is what it is at this point. And it is awful and sucks.
Yeah.
But the reality is that you need an advocate. You need somebody for you. And if you are in a place of privilge and you
got to speak
about that, you can do that. You can do that for a young marketer who is smart and bright and working really hard and trying to do everything right. You can advocate for them. Like if they should be in a leadership role, put them in one. Give them a chance.
It's just exhausting, right? That this is still having to be a conversation, but it has to be so that we shed light on it. And hopefully people who are in these positions that are still behaving this way have these moments of realization that they're doing that way, that they're behaving that way and can make changes. Because people can change.
Everybody is capable of change. Mm-hmm. Everybody is capable of change. We had horses and now we drive cars. Like we are capable of doing amazing things.
Yeah.
We can get over this. It can stop being a problem.
It comes back to being community. I feel like we keep coming back to that. But being that advocate in your community and in your workplace.
Absolutely.
Where you see it fit and where you see that person is not getting the light that they deserve shined on them.
That's it. 100%. Shine your light.
Shine your light. Love it. And I'm sorry, we're going over. Any last final tip, one tip for fellow women in B2B marketing? What would you bestow upon us? I feel like we've gotten so much wisdom from you already.
Yeah, I would say keep learning, keep reading, keep researching, keep staying in the mix, staying in the what's hip and what's cool. Like, don't get comfortable. Because this role and this line of work changes every single day more than any other line of work, honestly.
Yes.
Like, that's it's so medicine. True. You have to have a, you know, you have to go through a clinical trial for the medicine to change. Like, in marketing, it's like someday somebody's going to come up with something genius and you better be adapted. Like, just keep paying attention.
And that first mover advantage is so helpful in marketing. So always be testing.
Always be testing. ABT.
So true. Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for joining us today. For anybody, and I have a feeling everybody will want to connect with you and reach out afterwards. How can they, what's the best place for them to do so?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the best place, 100%. So yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I post a lot.
Love it. Thank you so much for sharing so much wisdom and being vulnerable and sharing what you're struggling with and should not be. And I'll put links to your LinkedIn and everything below in comments and show notes. So thank you for joining
us. Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us today, for listening. If you like the show, follow Lauren, connect to Lauren on LinkedIn, and share with a friend. Like and review the podcast. Every like and review helps. So thank you, everyone.